Studies in Occult Philosophy by G. de Purukar. Questions and Answers. Leave those in Kamaloka alone. Question: in connection with what has been said about the sufferings in Kamaloka, can we on earth do anything to relieve the sufferings of those who are in Kamaloka, especially the relatives whom we have lost and whom we suppose to be suffering there? G. de P. That is a question which has been asked by many kindly human hearts in the past, and in what are called the pagan times asked more insistently and more often than in Christian times. In fact, asked so frequently and an answer so insistently demanded that the Christian Church, in the Roman Communion at least, instituted what it has called the Masses for the souls in purgatory. If you will kindly understand that you need not worry about those whom you love, when they go through the Kamaloka. Their Kamaloka is painless. They are, in most cases, utterly unconscious of the passage. It is really only the evil-minded men, the grossly minded human beings, who have the unpleasant Kamalokic experience. It is infinitely better not to think about it, infinitely better. But there is one method of direct action we can do, and it is very important in these days. Whatever you do, don't try to enter into communication with them. That is the worst and most cruel thing you could do. Here again it is my duty to speak the truth. Our spiritistic brothers, through ignorance and often being men and women of kindly hearts and noble aspirations, have rushed in where even angels would fear to tread. They simply don't understand. Nature's methods are always kindly, always just. A prayer of the Romans was a noble one. Requiescat in pace. Let him rest in peace. The Kama Principle in Mediumship. In your lecture last Sunday, you said that a medium was a person in whom the principles were loosely knitted together. Could you explain that a little? How can our principles be loosely knit and how can we avoid that unfortunate condition? To say that the principles are loosely knitted together is of course a figure of speech. These are HPB's words. Perhaps I would phrase it in this way. I am sure I could not improve on HPB, but I have been asked this question so many times that it shows HPB's words have been ill understood. I would change the figure of speech, and say that the principles in the case of the medium are functioning badly, as in a machine. Now I am no mechanician at all, but I have noticed in riding in an automobile sometimes there are jerks and jars, and it is hard to start the thing going. The medium is something like that. The principles of the constitution are not under the control of the higher will. They do not function smoothly and easily, but there are jerks and jolts and jars. This is because the principles, being more or less freed from the dominating control of the central spiritual will, are affected by outside influences. They do not function easily and are not closely welded together, compactly, so to speak. Remember that all the principles of man are but phases of consciousness. We see it around us all the time. We see it in children, we see it in adults, we see people who do not seem to be able always to live in their highest and to do their best. They strive and yearn to do what is best, but they do not always succeed. The principles lack sufficient coherence, or rather subserviency to the dominating spirit within. The Kama principle, for instance, wants to run a bit on its own, wants to be a little independent, you know. How familiar that sounds. Or perhaps the Linga Sharira has a notion it wants to run a bit on its own apart from the other principles, and it does. And when this happens, a door, as it were, is opened, there is a crack. How can I express it? An entrance is made for the incoming into the constitution of outside influences, astral influences in this case, and the man is more or less swayed by foolish or evil thoughts. They come tramping into his brain like a lot of vagrants, and he becomes pro tempore subject to them and follows them. Foolish or evil influences, wicked suggestions, vile thoughts, or it may be trivialities. Whereas the man whose principles are under the control of the spiritual will, takes command and he is a man in every sense of the word. What he wills he does, and the principles function as smoothly and as easily as possible. That is the idea. Now the mediums I do not mean to suggest are all foolish and evil people. On the contrary. But they are unfortunate people in whom self-control is even less manifest than in ordinary or average people. They are people in whom the spiritual will lacks full or relatively full control of the whole being. Thoughts are elemental beings. What are thoughts? All thoughts, in esse, per se, are elemental beings, learning entities. A thought is surrounded by a thought form, that is embodied in a thought form, but the thought itself is an elemental energy. We ourselves at one time, in the far distant aeonic past, were thoughts of other self-conscious entities. Guard well thy mind, O Chela, against the thoughts which impinge upon it and seek entrance therein is one of the rules of the esoteric school. Some of the unfortunate criminals you often hear say, in extenuation, or in attempted extenuation, of a crime? Judge, I just couldn't help it. I don't know what was the matter with me, but something seized me and I couldn't stop. Such cases are weak men, lacking moral self-control, lacking the protection, the Akashic barrier, which automatically keeps out evil thoughts. Of course evil and good are relative, you understand that. There are evil things in the world, that is, imperfect things, but there are also good things. Here is the gist then of my answer. Every elemental is, at the core of the core of the heart of its being a divinity, a divine spark, and all evolution, all growth, is simply an unwrapping, an unfolding, of latent capacities locked up in the loftier parts of each evolving entity or thing. This applies not only to men but to the super gods, the demigods, men, beasts, plants, minerals, elementals, whatnot. Souls and monads. May I receive a little more light on two passages from your Fundamentals of the Esoteric Philosophy? Page 185 states that our human souls in a future manvantara will become monads. Well, I was under the impression that our souls were already monads. This is a very interesting and intricate point of doctrine. As a matter of fact, a soul is a vehicle which in time will bring out from itself its own svabhavik keynote, and when that is done it becomes a monad, but it is not a monad until it becomes monadic. Do you get the idea? We have the divine monad enshrining itself in its divine soul, we have our spiritual monad enshrining itself in our spiritual soul, we have the human monad enshrining itself in the human soul. We have the animal monad enshrining itself in the animal body, because our own physical bodies are animals when considered alone and apart from the higher part. A soul is a vehicle, but a living entity. And it must become monadic, in other words a god. That is just what we are in process of becoming, slowly, but we are on the way. At the present time we self-consciously live in our human souls. It is our future destiny through evolving, that is bringing out what is wrapped up, enclosed, within us, to become from the present human souls human gods. The human soul will have re-coalesced with its human monad, a divine being. The dual aspect of manas. The manas or the thinker is the reincarnating being. Its nature becomes dual as soon as it is attached to a body. My question is, what is the meaning of its being attached to a body and what is the meaning of as soon as? This is an interesting question because the teaching concerning the manas as a function or organ of thought or consciousness, is a very deep and mysterious one. It has been said by some theosophical teachers that manas is, as it were, the mind. But strictly speaking in technical theosophy it is erroneous so to speak of it. Manas is an organ of thought, as well as the faculty of thinking the thoughts of the cosmic consciousness which we perceive through this manasic organ. Now it must be obvious from this brief description, that an organ can be undeveloped, partially developed, or fully developed, and in the human race at the present time it is about halfway developed to what we may call relative perfection. The question which the questioner has asked refers to the time, as I understand it, when manas became active in the human race. Its nature becomes dual as soon as it is attached to a body. It begins to function at a certain period in the history of the human races. To speak of it as being attached to a body is but an easy, a graphic, manner of speech. Strictly speaking, the manasic faculty is no more attached to a body than the spirit is, but the former works through the body by the intermediary of a subordinate organ which we call the brain-mind. One cannot say that consciousness plays with its delicate fingers directly upon the substance of the brain because consciousness is one of the finest of energies, and the brain substance is exceedingly coarse by comparison therewith. But between consciousness, the manasic consciousness, and the physical substance of the brain, there are stages or degrees of decreasing ethereal substance, forming, as it were, a small hierarchy or ladder of differing ethereal substances, and it is through this ladder, through these various planes or grades of substance, from the pure manas principle to the physical brain, that the manasic ray works. Questioner: Brain then is body? Well, brain of course refers to the body, because I cannot conceive that manas acts through my toe, but the manasic principle permeates the body by means of the brain. Just as the brain is the guiding mental organ of the physical body, so is the manasic part of the constitution the guiding thought principle of that constitution. The brain is a part of the body. I think your question had some reference to time. You emphasized the word time. Questioner: The brain in the infant is there before man becomes dual. Now I think I see your point. All things are dual. Even electricity is dual in its action. The scientists speak of the positive pole and the negative pole. There is a positive side of consciousness and the opposite side of consciousness. Electricity is merely repeating in electrical spheres of action what happens everywhere. Thought is bipolar, therefore the manasic action is bipolar, but it becomes bipolar only when it reaches this plane of bipolar action. And this took place in what we call the third root race of the present fourth round of this globe D. Questioner: When does the manas become dual in entering into the brain? Just as soon as it begins to manifest as thought. We all know that a little child does not think as a grown man. No little child can write one of the wonderful plays of Shakespeare. That comes with time. But just as soon as the mental faculty begins to function through the child's brain, it becomes dual, because duality belongs to this plane. There is the higher and the lower. Just as soon as the child begins to think, it begins to perceive right and wrong, high and low, the secret or hid and the open or obvious. The manas functions dually just as soon as the child begins to think. And this is because in our time periods in this fourth round in this globe D, manas functions in a dual action, in a dual way. Questioner: Then at what point does it cease to be dual after it is disattached from the body? Ah, that is a different question. We cease to be dual in action, in thought, we cease to be torn by the passions of our weak and vacillating human character, when we have risen above division and duality and reached the divine flame within. That will come fully at the end of the fifth round and in perfection at the end of the seventh round on this earth, which of course as you know belongs to one of the planetary chains. Questioner: Does the brain after a while become an impediment to one instead of a help? Not only after a time, but even at the present time. Do you know? There is a way of living in thought rather than in thoughts. It is thoughts with which the brain deals. But there is an organ of the brain which we cannot call the brain even though it is a part of it, but it is a center through which pours thought rather than the mere thoughts which harass and distract us all. Now when we can rise out of the region of these limiting little personal distracting and harassing thoughts into the regions of pure thought, live in the manasic principle voluntarily, that is with a will, then we shall have risen above mere thoughts, and the brain becomes non-operative then, and yet we think. Just pause a moment. We must all of us have experienced times when, under the governance of some great idea or ideal, or under the holy guidance of an impersonal love, we realize we live in a region or in a sphere which is entirely outside the brain, and as soon as we descend into the brain atmosphere again, or allow the brain to control our feelings or emotions, it is like a fall. This illustrates the dual action of the manasic faculty, the lower and the higher manas.